Hi folks, hope you're well. My name is Jim Carl, welcoming you to the latest podcast from the Banter team. Last year at the Bloom Festival in the Phoenix Park, we spoke to award-winning garden designer, author and broadcaster Fino Nulon, not once but twice. In the first part of this podcast, we hear from him as he talks about how you can find remedies for ailments and sources for beauty treatments in your garden. In the second half, Fionn joins us to talk about the gardens he's put together with transition year students from Ashdown School in Cork and Collinstown Park Community College in Clontarf. And we'll also hear from Collinstown students Luke Rothwell and James Adair.
Hi everybody, welcome along to Back to Banter at Bloom. My name is Jim Carroll. I'm very, very pleased to welcome the holistic gardener Fionn to Banter. Please give him a round of applause. Before we start talking about kind of treatments and for ailments that you can kind of find in your garden, tell us about your own background, Fionn. Like, how did you get hooked on gardening in the first place?
My dad was a gardener, so I had no choice but to cut the lawn and rake the grass and prune the roses and so forth. So in a way it's in the blood, but really for me what got me really interested in gardening and really interested in gardening as a therapeutic modality was I had a bad bike crash and I kind of had to learn how to walk again and I had to deal a lot with pain management. Now as a kid I had done karate and that sort of stuff, and I got into kind of meditation and yoga, so I knew kind of breath control was good for pain relief, and I began practicing more of the holistic side of stuff as opposed to going and doing occupational therapy. But then I found that things like lilac, the fragrance of lilac, was quite sedative. I discovered that eating chili peppers switches off substance P, which is the pain signal receptor in the body. I learned that lavender was an adaptogenic herb, so that when you're tired, lavender picks you up, and when you're a bit hyper or wired, lavender calms you down. So I began investigating the different herbal alternatives that I could use just within my own illness. And that year then, once I was back and fully on my feet, I had initially been studying art in NCID, and I thought, I don't know how art is doing much good. You know, it's pretty and it's useful in that sense, but the skills that I have learned just in my own recovery should translate somewhere else. And I took a job up in the Phoenix Park, and they eventually stationed me over in Carcheshire Homes beside Mary's Hospital. And that's primarily a centre for wheelchair users. Now, this is a good 15 years ago, and sensory gardens weren't popular or known about. And what I wanted to do was I wanted to create a window view from every room so that anybody who couldn't get outside, at least nature could be brought in. And I would chat with the lads, and, you know, if they were into kind of Chelsea, we may have a blue window basket. If they were into Manchester United, we'd have a red window basket. But then we got a polytunnel in, and instead of growing pretty flowers in the polytunnel, I put in grapes and hops, and we set up a brewer's club. So then all the lads came out then. You didn't need a power chair then to get them out. So they came out, we set up a brewer's club. And just that level of interaction between the guys, like women are very strong. And that's what I've learned from my mum and from my family. And I often think, you know, women are like a blade of grass and men are like the hut on the beach. So when the monsoon comes or the hurricane comes, men crumble and crush. Women bend with the grass, like the grass, and come back again. So all of the women who were there in recovery from car accidents or who had been born with a physical condition that meant they ended up being a wheelchair user were very adaptive to the process. But the men had no mechanism to deal with, you know, and it's very hard to step up beside a guy and say, how are you doing? But it's really easy to say, or how are you feeling? But it's really easy to step up to a man and say, how are your tomatoes? You know, and then there's a conversation, do you know? And once there's a conversation, then you're talking about how you feel about tomatoes or what was the weather like. And I found that horticultural therapy was very beneficial in that way. And even the stuff like when you move a plant from one pot to the next, that improves pinch force. So somebody recovering from stroke, that's an occupational therapy trick that you take away from the clinical setting and you bring it into a garden or a polytunnel, and all of a sudden it's healing by stealth. There's no stigma attached to it. You're not getting your half-hour treatment session. You're just enjoying yourself doing a pastime. And psychologically, that sense of achievement, that connection with nature, brings about a healing process in itself. I mean, one of the things that most people, that nobody really talks about, is that soil itself has a bacteria in it called Bacterium vaccae. And Bacterium vaccae, when we encounter it, causes us to release serotonin from our brain. So serotonin, the happy hormone, is released every time we garden without gloves. You know, so in terms of for mental health issues, that's amazing. But like I'd started talking about kind of myself and using lavender. Now, when I work with schools groups, there's two plants I always get them to plant, and that's lavender and rosemary. Because really how aromatherapy works is that the olfactory senses at the top of the nose are linked in with the limbic region in the brain. And the limbic region in the brain is responsible for memory, but also for endorphin release. So aromatherapy triggers that part of the brain, which is why it's so successful of all the holistic modalities. Massage works for some things. Energy field therapy works for others. Color therapy works for some things. But aromatherapy pretty much works for everything. So when you smell chamomile, chamomile goes to the brain and it says, be calm, and the brain calms itself down. When you smell mint or any of the stimulant herbs, that goes to the brain and it says, pep up, and your brain peps up. When you smell lavender, and an amazing miracle happens. It goes to the brain and it says, what do you need? And the brain responds with, I'm shattered, give me some energy. So it gives you some energy. Or the brain goes, I'm hyper, and it calms you down. So for children, and I work a lot with people who may be in recovery from drug addiction or alcohol issues. I work a lot with people who may be developing dementia or in the latter stages of Parkinson's. The lavender is a great way of counteracting the stresses within life because it just levels you out and balances you. The other one that I use is rosemary, because rosemary improves your recall by up to 75%. And basically what happens there is, if you, when you're studying for your exams, like see there's a younger group in the audience, if when you're studying for your exams or you want to learn something off by heart, if you smell rosemary, whether it's real rosemary or it's essential oil in a burner, that activates the memory quarter of the brain. So then when you come to sit your exam, if you smell rosemary again, it helps you access that part of your brain. They're now using rosemary fragrances when they're working with severe cases of dementia, where people forget their name. Now, there's a couple of different issues that happen in dementia. Lots of people time travel. So they may be 70, but when they wake up in the morning, they think that they're 30, and they leave the house, and they're going to their job, and they're looking to drive the bus again, you know, and that's a difficult one to deal with. So using the rosemary in the therapy is a way of remembering that you're not 30, that you are 70 and you are in a hospital situation. But then using the lavender counteracts any negativity or depression surrounding that, you know. So that was my intro into kind of horticulture therapy and how I could extend that and use it. Yeah. And I've been bringing those kind of notions to bloom for the last 9 years. Right. And it's really only in the last 3 to 4 years that people are coming back and saying, do you know what, I tried that thing you were talking about last year, Finn, and it actually does work, and here's my sister and she's the living proof, you know.
I'm curious as well, Finn, like, I mean, after you had that bike crash, obviously you were in hospital for a while, you know, and in hospital they treat you with like conventional drugs. They fill you full of kind of pills, they give you tablets. So when you start talking about this, what was the reaction of the medical professionals to this, or did you talk to them about it?
I began to speak to them about it, but I found there's still today a big reticence about herbal treatments. Now, what I find fascinating is there are 120 chemical constituents derived from plants that now feature in over-the-counter medicines. So if you think about it, and all doctors will not advocate that you use anything alternative because they're so used to the conventional allopathic medicine. I mean, you can fight the case or argue the point that big pharma have a big lobby group and they control that sort of stuff. But big pharma are also raiding the Amazon to try and find new cures for the latest things. And what I'm saying in my garden over here is that we don't need to raid the Amazon. There's lots of hardy plants. So if you had a toothache or a back pain 150 years ago and you went to the newly formed chemists or pharmacists, they would have given you a bit of ground up brownish white powder, which wasn't heroin. It was willow bark, right? So willow bark contains salicylic acid, and salicylic acid switches off the pain receptors in the body. The Bayer group discovered that willow bark was very effective as a pain reliever, and in their labs they broke it down to discover the salicylic acid, and they mass produced salicylic acid in a synthetic version, and they're the guys who painted the aspirin. So the aspirin that you take for your headache has just replaced you going down to the local park and chewing a bit of willow leaf or a bit of willow bark. Now, we'd probably be reticent to do that today because God knows what noxious fumes has gone by the bit of waste ground. You know, somebody may have changed their oil there or dumped their rubbish bags there or car fumes. But if you grow willow in your own garden, you know 100% how safe and how clean it is. And you can use that willow to make willow tea, which is a great pain reliever. But as a beauty treatment, salicylic acid resurfaces skin. So if you make a willow leaf tea from the salicylic acid from the willow, that's a great beauty wash for your skin. But even better, the willow tree has an amazing property in that what the salicylic acid does in willow trees in botany or in the real life is when a willow tree is under attack. So say I'm a willow tree and all of a sudden there's a deer browsing me or there's aphids attacking or there's a fungal infection happening. I secrete salicylic acid on the air and it wafts for up to 2 miles. And every other tree and plant that the salicylic acid in the air encounters, it switches on the immune system. So me being under attack, and this is the beautiful thing about nature, me being under attack switches on the immune system of everybody around me. Now, we can replicate that in the garden. So if you have sickly plants, if you have plants that are going yellow or plants that are constantly under attack from aphids or runner beans that just aren't producing, you can go to your local park or your local waste ground or canal where willow trees are grown wild everywhere, strip off a bark length about that size and put it in a jam jar of water. Leave it on your windowsill for about 2 weeks and you'll notice that the water will go a dirty brown first and then at the bottom you'll have all this white residue. It's kind of like when you get apple cider vinegar and you have the little strings in it. That then can be added to a watering can and that can feed your sickly plants. And that's a Barocca boost for your plants. That switches on their immune system and picks them up. If you're transplanting a plant and moving it from one part of your garden to another, very often the plant goes into transplantation shock. Willow water is amazing for that. So it's just that thing that the garden can heal us, but there's also cures in the garden that can heal your garden.
Yeah, I mean, those cures for ailments that you can find for ailments that you're suffering yourself, Fionn, you know what I mean? Like, have you been, since you've put the book out and since you've been talking about this, have you been approached by kind of, I suppose, corporate companies about, like, doing more with this? I mean, or are they kind of like saying, as you kind of explained about Bayer, that they've got aspirin, they've already kind of been there before you?
Yeah, well, what's happening is a couple of people have asked me I have two books out now at the present. One is First Aid from the Garden, and it's all about the cures that you can make for burns and cuts and scrapes. And then the other one is Beauty Treatments from the Garden. So it's everything about what's in your larder that will help you with cellulite, or what plant in the garden will lighten your hair or can act as a conditioner or can treat acne. And the problem with that is that some people will be interested in me lending my name to making a product. But then all I'm doing is just peddling the product. And really what I would rather be doing is disseminating information about how people can make their own product at home. I think if all of a sudden we had Fionn's face cream, it's a different ball game, you know? It's like, you know, who wants to buy the Jamie Oliver vinegar type thing, you know? And that's not what I'm about. I'm about trying to show what information to get it out there that people can go and make their own ethical health choices. Yeah. Like, for example, I'm talking a lot on the other garden, on the beauty garden, about what's actually in makeup. You know, and there's lots of what's called estrogenic binders contained in your normal makeup and makeup removers. So they bind to the estrogen receptors in the female body, and the female body then, or the brain, believes it has more estrogen than it should have, and that can cause problems with early onset menopause, with ovarian cancer and breast cancer. So what I'm saying is, okay, you might not want to give up on your Max Factor or your Esther Lauder Foundation, but take it off with olive oil. Don't take it off with an alcohol agent that's just going to strip your skin, dry your skin, and put more chemicals. What you put on your skin is in your liver in 20 seconds. It's in your heart in 40 seconds, and it's in your brain in 60 seconds. So the more natural product, you don't have to buy my book and make up my recipes, but you can look at what you're actually putting into your basket or what you're putting on your face and maybe make a few different changes and look for companies who already have natural products.
Okay, I mean, you talked earlier on about like how you, I suppose, came around to finding the cures for ailments from your garden from the bike accident you had. Mm. Like, where did the beauty treatments idea come from? Was that just a natural follow-on?
Yeah, I mean, I work an awful lot with transition year students. And we have, I'd ask you all to take a look at the blooming transition down at the Postcard Gardens. What I done was I challenged two schools to come to Bloom to create a garden that would either affect their environment or affect their society, to make that change, to become the change that they want to be. And, you know, for me, it's about bringing horticulture into the teenage generation, because the teenagers... Young kids are looked after up until they go into secondary school. You have incredible edibles, food dudes, the whole lot. And then the next time you may encounter horticulture is when you retire. You know, so it's a bit late to leave it that long. So to keep it in the schools, it's a great way of keeping in with the curriculum and getting kids involved in nature and so forth. But the beauty treatments came about because when I'm working with a group of lads, the lads don't want to garden. It's too girly for them. They're not that interested. So what I can do with the lads is I can show them the plant Euphorbia, and I can tell them that that plant was named after a king of Greece called Euphorbius, who took every poison known to man in small doses so that he could never be poisoned or killed. And then this guy turned up one day and said, "Have you tried this one?" And he said no, and he took it and he dropped dead. And they named the poison after him, and that's Euphorbia. And so the kids are a bit fascinated by that. And then I'll say to them, "Here's Achillea." Now, Achillea is named after Achilles. And then I'll bring them in and we'll watch the film with Brad Pitt. And then the guys are all like, "Oh, yeah, this is great." And then I'll show them the gladioli. And I'll say that the shape of the gladioli is where the gladiators got their name from, because that was where they were inspired to make their short swords. So then the kids, the male kids, then started to see gardening as something manly, as something interesting. With the female transition year students, very much they're just on their phone and, yeah, trees, yeah, okay, yeah, right, yeah.
So like me.
So, but then I tell them, "Do you know chamomile lightens your hair by 3 shades? Do you know strawberries whitens your teeth?" And then all of a sudden it's, "Oh, is that so?" You know?
So they're prepared to swap then. They're prepared to swap their kind of Bobby Browns and Max Factor for what they get in the garden.
Yeah, yeah, with a tremendous amount of enthusiasm, which is kind of... slightly terrifying and slightly exciting at the same time, because I'm hoping really that we're in a couple of generations we're going to be able, like, I believe, like, you can't abandon the modern world. We all need our phones and we all need Wi-Fi and whatever else, but, you know, to get out, for everybody who's here at Bloom now, to get out under that wave light, that's resetting our circadian rhythms. So they say gardeners live for 15 years longer than non-gardeners. Right, and there's a couple of reasons for that, but the main reason for that is because the natural wavelength of blue light resets the circadian rhythms in your brain, so you get a better night's sleep, and your endorphin release the next day is more level. So that improves life longevity. You're not burning up your battery. By the time it gets to 3 or 4 o'clock in the day, you're not reaching for the cup of coffee, you're not going for the sugary snack, you're already topped up. Also, sunshine causes us to synthesize vitamin D on our skin. Now, Irish people suffer tremendously from inflammatory diseases, from heart disease right the way back to kind of psoriasis, arthritis. And it's because we don't synthesize enough vitamin D in our system. We don't have the quality of sunshine all the way through the year to have level amounts of vitamin D. And when it does come out, it tends to come out in a big burst and we burn. So it's not utilized. It's burned up in repairing the sunburn. The foods that it's in fish, it's in mushrooms, and it's in bell peppers. But the problem is that our saliva doesn't extract vitamin D because vitamin D is fat soluble. Gastric juices kill off vitamin D. So how do you get it from a nutritional source? And what I say is, if you can use olive oil or rapeseed oil or any of your favorite oils and pour it over those foods, the vitamin D has already been extracted into the oil before it goes into your mouth, and your saliva doesn't kill it off. So it gets into the bloodstream. So really, if we're having more vitamin D in our system, whether it's through sun or it's through dietary nature, that improves your skin, your hair, your nails, your teeth. But really what it is vitamin D is, again, a precursor of serotonin. So it's the happy hormone. So gardeners all of the time are being medicated towards happiness and joy. Anybody I know, and I mean, some of you know that I've worked with some famous people who have had cancer crises and different illnesses. Any of those who are gardeners have always recovered a hell of a lot quicker because they're too busy to feel sorry for themselves. Now that sounds harsh, but that's what it is. They're too busy to let the chemo really get them down. Why? Because they've bulbs to get in the ground. Yeah. Because they have a tree that needs to be pruned. And it's like, I'm having none of this nonsense. I need to get into the garden and keep going. So that's the thing. That's the power of the gardening as a motivator and a healing agent. I would use it with lots of groups, like health groups, as a distraction. I mean, very often the kind of occupational therapy and the different therapeutic modalities that go into clinics and into places is to distract people. You know, painting, doing finger painting or singing a song, you forget that you're sick. And in forgetting that you're sick, you allow the space in your body to recover. Your own natural inherent healing. If you cut your finger and wait long enough, it'll heal. You don't need to run for the Savalon and the plaster. It'll heal. Your body wants to heal. You want to live. It's called life force for a reason. It's forceful. It's hard to die, you know? And we often think we're very fragile beings, but we're not. We're sturdy and we want to live. And when you get out and you garden and you're battered by the elements, but you're still, you know, on a wing and a prayer, urging your tulips to come up, and it kind of changes your mind. Whatever about mindfulness, gardening is a way to reprogram you into resilience. And there's a whole new movement called resilient gardening, which is to give people this quality of wanting to connect with life and come out of depression and come out of serious illnesses and really embrace life again.
Yeah, I'm curious as well. I mean, when you kind of like show people what can be actually done in the garden in terms of curing ailments, what's been the most surprising reaction? What's been the ailment that people go, you can actually cure this from what we find in the garden?
Yeah, psoriasis is the big one. You know, people are really amazed that you don't have to go on steroids. You know, that something as simple as malt vinegar is a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory that can take down the redness and the itchiness. And then if you add in something like rosemary, which is also a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory, that's great. But the big reaction that I've been having at this year's bloom, I've been on the radio a little bit in the last while talking about barefoot gardening. And lots of people are a little bit shocked or bemused by that. And it's basically that, you know, I'm vegetarian, so I wear rubber shoes. So basically, as I walk around all of the time, I'm building up static electricity in my body. If you're wearing leather-soled shoes, you're also building up static electricity in your body. When you get to about 100 volts, your immune system stops working. And the scavengers of free radicals, the antioxidants that are naturally in your body, stop functioning. So all of your cells start ticking over and becoming mutagenic. It enhances the aging process. Generally, at the end of the day, you're up to about 240, 250 volts. If you take your shoes and socks off and stand barefoot on the ground, your polarity of your body drops to zero. When it drops to zero, your immune system reboots and your body flushes itself with an agent called catalase. Now, catalase is a miracle. It's an antioxidant that's naturally produced in the body that's more effective than any of the super smoothies or super foods or energy bars or protein drinks. And what it does is they're now trying to synthesize it because they found out that it prevents hair from going gray. So you're probably going to have your catalase shampoo in about 2 or 3 years. It may be Fiend's favorite. I'll have to grow some to flick on the TV ads.
I think it's too late for some of us.
Well, I can do the beards maybe. But it's that whole thing that what catalase does then is catalase mops up all of the free radicals in your body. So you only need 5 minutes a day and it, that keeps you ticked over. And what I say to people is, look, you know, if you're going to stand barefoot in the garden, do it in the back garden, because if you do it in the front garden, they might call the police. But, you know, you think of any time you've gone to a beach and you've kicked off your shoes and socks and you've gone for a walk along the edge of the beach and you feel brilliant after it. That's got nothing to do with the fact that you're in Saint-Tropez, you know? You know, it's literally our you know, where have we got in Dublin? Bray. Yeah, I didn't want to say Bray.
Done a bit.
Yeah. So it doesn't matter where you are. You can be in Silver Strand or you can be in Saint-Tropez, right? It's not the fact that it's the beach that's doing it for you. It's the fact that you've got grounded in that short walk. You know, that you've reconnected with the earth. If you do it on lawn, especially on dewy lawn in the morning, that's a really quicker way of dropping your polarity down. If you do it on the beach, the benefit of doing it on the beach is the salt water is very good for your skin on your feet, but the silica in the sand buffs up and removes hard heels. So you're getting the beauty, a pedicure, and an antioxidant flush. I'm starting to sound like I'm Mr. Frugal now, but that's not the issue. Like all of the beauty treatments that I'm making and all of the stuff that's mentioned in the book, it's not so much that you can, like, for example, alpha hydroxyl acids. They're one of the big treatments that are used to resurface skin, right? So if you don't want to get the sander out and do the dermabrasion, or you don't want to get the Botox treatments, you can go to a beauty salon and you can ask for an AHA treatment. It probably costs about 100, 150 euros. Really what that is it's a fruit acid that's contained in strawberries. So for a 3 euro punnet, and next week is strawberry week, so they'll be even on sale next week, that what you can do then is that you can get your strawberries, mash them up with a little bit of green tea, rub them into your face, and leave them for 15 minutes, right? So the first 5 minutes, all of the juices in the strawberry breaks up the lipid layers in the skin. And the lipid layers are what adheres the dead skin cells to the cells underneath. So it's better than an exfoliant. That sheds off. The next 5 minutes, the alpha hydroxyl acids goes into the lower dermal layer and it causes collagen, which plumps up your skin, and elastin, which keeps your skin taut. It reproduces them. So you basically get a kind of a 5-year facelift. This is what the commercial products will tell you, but you can do this naturally. The last 5 minutes, strawberries are amazing. If there was only one food group on the planet that you could have, I would have strawberries. Because what strawberries do is strawberries give you a tremendous amount of vitamin C, a tremendous amount of zinc, and all of the trace mineral elements that you need to have vitality in your skin, your hair, your eyes, your teeth, and your bones. You know? So all of those agents then soak into the skin and resurface the skin without giving you any redness or blotchiness. You know, so there's loads of stuff out there, whether it's in the kitchen or in the garden, that you can put together to make yourself. Like, the joke on my garden is it's a pretty garden, but it's a garden to make you prettier than the garden, you know? Yeah.
Last question, Fiona. Thank you so much for giving you up your time to come here. You're coming back to us on Monday to talk about the blooming transition, the transition of your gardens. But last question for now, I suppose, is, like, you've done the book about, you know, herbal remedies. You've done the book about beauty treatments. What's next? I mean, have you got an idea in place for what you can do next in terms of a book?
Yeah, the next book, and it'll probably be launched at next bloom. I'm in the middle of writing it now. Is common cures from the garden, and the whole notion there is, you know, how do you look at backache, cold, flu? I mean, one of the big things, the go-to treatments for boosting your immune system, for example, would be a plant like echinacea. And the problem with echinacea is echinacea works in your body for about 3 months because it's an agitator. So it agitates your immune system into working. But then your immune system cops on and goes, nah, it's not going to push my button anymore. And after about 3 months, it stops working. So then you need to go off it for about a month and come back onto it again. Time, ordinary garden time, for anybody who's under the age of 15, your whole immune system is based in your thymus. And your thymus is named after the thyme plant. The more time you take into your body under the age of 15, the more antibodies and T cells will be generated throughout your lifetime. Because the thyme has a symbiotic relationship with the thymus and keeps your immune system active. Once you go over 15, your thymus stops working. So then we need time in our body to mimic the same chemical constituents that would be coming from the thymus. And time is a great way to boost your immune system. Time causes the macrophages, which break down all of the foreign bodies that may come into your body. So that's pathogens and diseases and all that sort of stuff. It helps gobble them up and break them down more effectively. So eating more time is a great way of keeping your immune system active all year round. And you don't have to take a break in it. It's like I say about the strawberries and the strawberries cleaning your teeth. You know, you don't have to sit in a chair with a mouthful of bleach once a month to have white teeth. You just need to eat a few more strawberries.
Okay, Fiona, you're on. Thank you very much.
Thank you all.
Hi everybody, welcome along to Banter here at Bloom. This is basically a very special banter, mainly because at the start we were talking to one person, but instead we've got four people up here on stage, three people, myself up on stage. At the very end of the sofa here, we've got Fiona Nulon. He was here at Banter earlier in the week talking about basically the holistic gardening part of his work. But basically, today we're joined by two students from Collinstown College in Clondalkin. Am I right? Introduce yourselves there, lads. Don't be shy.
I'm Luke Rodwell.
I'm James Adair.
Welcome to Banter at Bloom. It's great to have you here. So we'll start with you, Fiona. Like, tell me a little bit about, like, you know, this transition year project, and basically, like, the two schools that you picked that got involved, how they got involved, and what it's about.
Well, I think within Irish horticulture that for children under the age of 12, they're well looked after. There's the incredible edibles, there's the food dudes, there's lots goes on in primary school to encourage children to sow seeds and to learn about nutrition and where their food comes from. And then you get into secondary school and it's all about your intercert and your leaving cert and exams, and there's not a lot of horticulture, and maybe the next time you come to gardening is when you've retired. And I think we're missing a big trick in keeping the youth involved in nature. People complain a lot about what they call biophobia and are saying that kind of they won't plant trees or have a community garden in an area because the kids may wreck it. What else would the kids know what to do with the trees unless they're actually actively planting the trees? But for something like Bloom, I think it's important for the guys because there are so many plants that they may come across in their chemistry lessons, in their biology lessons, in their home economics, that if we have more school gardens, that the school gardens can double up as an outdoor classroom, but also as an educational resource. So I think for that generation between the ages of 15 and 17, Bloom needs their voice. Bloom needs the creativity of that age group. And I guess what I done was I challenged two schools to come to Bloom and either change their environment or change their society. And one of the schools, Ashton from Cork, they decided that what they wanted to change was the school environment in terms of looking at peer pressure and bullying and exam stress. And they created a garden that was based on aromatherapeutic plants that would help you remember more at exam time, that would help you calm down if you are feeling the pressure, and also to look at some mindfulness techniques, where the guys on the stage behind me here looked at how they could change their environment. Now, Collinstown is a great school. They get involved in so much. They've won awards for the films they've made. They're very great. They have a bloggers club, very interactive, very much of an outreach school. And one of the whole ideas behind theirs is that it's called the Hedge School. And it's looking at how other schools may be able to create school gardens based on their module. And their module is to teach people coming to Bloom about the different types of hedges, plants that can attract wildlife, plants that can feed a community. And it's about looking at less concrete in the urban jungle. So the guys really spent an awful lot of time researching the background of plants and preparing the garden and bringing it and coming to Bloom. But I think hopefully now what they've done based on their experience is there's so many youth groups and schools now who are so keen and so active to come to Bloom next year that maybe when you come here next year, we'll have a Bloom and Transition village. Not just two gardens in the postcard, but an actual village. And we're in that, maybe we can do something interesting like a TED Talks Junior or look at career guidance. Like the two guys here, they're both rappers. They're going to rap for us now in a while. No, so that'll be the whole idea, that you can come here where the younger kids can come and get involved with all the other stuff. What do teenagers do? We need to keep teenagers and let them have self-expression within society. This is the future of Bloom, but this is the future of the world.
Okay, so in your terms then, Luke and James, when this idea kind of came up in the school as a transition year project, what was your first reaction? What was your first kind of thoughts about gardening, Luke?
Well, I never done gardening ever, like, in my life. I was just excited to do it and everything. I was wondering how to properly plant plants, learn everything about it, like.
And when you say you never thought about gardening before, it's like, you know, had you ever kind of like seen anyone on TV? Had you, like, I mean, if you're a rapper, had you ever seen any rappers talking about food or where food came from before?
No, nothing like that at all. Right.
I say, James, like, I mean, when Fionn came on board, when your teacher, Mr. O'Reilly, kind of like talked about this project, you know, was there kind of like a feeling that this was something easy, or was it a case of this is something that no one else was talking about?
Well, when I first got introduced to it, I found out that nobody around our age actually likes gardening or understands how to do it.
Did either of you garden, say, in primary school? Because that's something that Fionn noticed, that the gardening happened in primary school, but the minute she moved into the bigger school, it stopped.
Yeah, I noticed that when I was in primary school, we used to always go out and plant daffodils or something like that. But when we hit transition year, secondary school, it just stopped.
Yeah. And, like, I mean, Fionn was talking there about, like, I mean, different plants, Luke, in the garden to help with things like mindfulness and remembering and things like that. Like, was there also kind of a sense when you started talking about gardening that it's also about food as well?
Yeah.
You didn't know anything about it or anything, so.
Yeah. So would it be the case then, like, I mean, when you went to the local shop or whatever, it's like you had a clue where those vegetables are coming from?
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, Fionn, when you started the project with the lads here in Collinstown and also, like, down in Ashton as well, I mean, did you kind of find that all your kind of, like, what you were hearing in the classroom when you talked to the lads like these or whoever down in Ashton, did they all kind of confirmed what you already knew?
Yeah, I mean, it's just that thing. It's, you know, it's so easy to forget what you've done when you were 7, when you're 14, you know? So it can something that the kids in the audience here may have a passion from. They may enjoy the live farm beside. They may enjoy seeing how they can grow strawberries and bring them home. All of a sudden then, the pressures of life, having to think about a career, having to make it into school in the morning, having to make sure you have your right shoes and your uniform, all of the pressures of that takes away from the enjoyability of gardening. So if there isn't a garden in school, and in most places there may not be even a garden at home, how do you get turned on or tuned in to gardening as a pastime? Or gardening as creative expression? And what the guys have done is they've brought their creative expression into the gardens. So it's not just that they're learning how to plant a strawberry, it's that they're looking at how they might improve their school. So when the garden is finished here at Bloom, it goes back to the school. And the lads will be working on building a courtyard garden in the school that will act as a study room when on warm days. You know, if you're feeling the pressure in the class, you'll be able to go outside and engage with the garden, which means that having a garden there now this year after Bloom means for all other transition years as they come through, that gardening and the horticulture model is a fundamental part of their year experience. Transition year shouldn't just be about trying to think about what career path you want to take and getting a small bit of work experience. It should continue on the educational stuff, you know? And that's what's so good. At this age group, that's really where it's at. That's where you're getting into music, you're reading books, you're finding your fashion sense, you know. If you're sticking in your blue earrings, you're sticking in your blue earrings. You know? So why can't you bring that forward then and put that into the garden?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's just a wonderful thing to keep alive and to keep every generation involved in it.
Yeah.
Bloom shouldn't just be for a small portion of the family section and a lot of the over 50s. Bloom should be for everybody, you know? And the great thing about Bloom is if we're saying kids go free, well, let kids have a voice here as well and teach us something, do you know? It's not all a one-way stream. It's a dialogue what happened.
Yeah. James, if this hadn't come along, what would you have been doing in transition year?
Not much. We would, I go around collecting bins in my school. I'd be doing that mainly if I wasn't in agriculture.
Yeah. And what about you, Luke? What would you have ended up doing?
Doing the same, like, always do the same things.
And, like, as a result of kind of doing this garden, you know, do you think gardening is something that you kind of will do in the future? Is it something that you kind of, like, talked about when you go home as well?
Yeah, pretty much.
Probably have my own garden when I'm older and everything. Like,
so what would be in your own garden then?
like out my back, I'd do my own garden and everything, like plant everything myself.
Yeah.
I learned how to do that and everything's now, so.
Yeah. I know both of you have been at Bloom like since Thursday, so you've been kind of like, you've been all over the place, you've been roaming all over the place. But in terms of, say, the show gardens over there, in terms of the OPW, what's impressed you?
See, I brought all the guys in to give them the tour of the show gardens and to show them the other bits and pieces. So we actually got to go in, and unfortunately, like everybody else who comes to Bloom, you just get to stand behind the rope, where the guys get to go in and have a look at the other designers' gardens and see it from a different perspective. So you enjoyed some of the gardens. I think you liked the Peter Pan garden and some of the tricks that was there. So again, that's another way of showing how you can have creative expression in the space. Apart from them self-expressing their own interests, they get to see how that actually works as in terms of as an industry, as a potential career path. I mean, I'm hoping that from all of this, we're not just going to get a new generation of gardeners gardening at home, but we'll find the new ecologists, we'll find the new food scientists, we'll find... That's it, you know. We'll get the people out there active and engaged, and it's to keep it in the educational system.
Yeah. Okay, so, like, you know, I'm curious about, like, what you saw, actually, that kind of, like, that stuck in your mind then. I mean, for example, there's one of the gardens, the Pieta House Gardens. There's an amazing mural that Joe Caslin did. He's a graffiti artist. He's been doing kind of stuff. Do you pick up on things like that, or were you picking up on what's been growing?
Yeah, like, we've seen everything. Like, the PA House Garden was really good. Explains something, like, it teaches us something when you look at it and everything.
Yeah. And, like, James, I mean, like, you know, Fiona was talking about, like, did you're going back, kind of, you're going to put a garden in Collinstown, it's going to be there for a while, it's going to be a courtyard garden. So, I mean, what would you be saying, like, what would you be hoping that kids coming up after you, kids, like, I mean, say, in second and third year, when they get to transition here, what will they get from the garden?
Well, they can go in when they're after the exams. And, like, hopefully they can have, if when the apple tree is done growing, they can have an apple, read a book in the security behind the privacy of our garden.
Yeah.
And that they will hopefully contribute to it and help improve our skill for our gardens.
Very good. And, like, I mean, Fionn, like, you know, let's talk a little bit about, you know, I suppose, kind of like the costs involved as well. I mean, you know, if you're going to, like, roll something like this out, obviously it's going to be expensive. And it's going to, like, I mean, obviously in schools, we know how strapped schools are for cash. So, like, I mean, have you kind of, like, I mean, seen a willingness by, like, local communities to get involved in this? Or are there other areas that could be tapped for this?
There kind of is. I find, you know, because it's done through Bloom, people see the kudos and the credibility of associating with Bloom. So it makes it much, much easier for the schools to be able to source their own materials. So in a way, Bloom would be the vehicle for building up your material base to come back and then create the garden. So what Collinstown have done here is that they've created a small walk-around postcard-sized garden just for the general public to be able to engage with them and talk to them about plants. But following on from this, from the publicity that they've got, from the fact that the president in his speech endorsed the gardens, all that sort of stuff, it means that local garden centres now may help contribute and give in some plants. But it also means that parents become more active as well. So there may be a thing where over the summertime, parents and the children at home are growing their plants, and then they'll bring them in when the school term starts back up again, and we'll have a community garden based within the school. And that will facilitate the outdoor classrooms. So it's different models for different schools, because really depends on what area you're in or what background you're in. Yeah. So for Ashton, who came from Cork, there's lots of growers in Cork. They had Future Forests and Blarney Castle came on board. When you're a Dublin school, it's much, much harder because you're competing with so many other charitable services. And very often when you contact somebody, they say, oh, look, we support the Irish rugby team, or we support the Irish Heart Foundation. And it's hard to get that message across to say, no, this is something different. Don't think about this as being a charitable donation towards something. Yeah. Think about this as helping a movement get off the ground that's only going to be more beneficial to your area. I mean, the more trees you have planted in an area, the less incidences of social misbehavior. The more street-lined trees you have in commercial areas, the longer people stay to shop and the more money they spend. Now, this is not something I'm making up out of the top of my head. There are reports on this all over Europe, but we're a little bit slower in Ireland to think about that, because while we're agri-based, we forget the horticulture in terms of urban settings And, you know, outside of bloom, we have the bloom fringe, which is another thing that's kind of encouraging people to look at how we can garden in urban spaces and pretty the city and get something from it, you know?
Yeah. Okay, I want to kind of supposed to take up that point you just said there about, like, you know, the, around the city and kind of like antisocial behaviour with the two lads here. You know, have you noticed, you know, since you started, like, getting involved in transition to your gardens, that you're kind of like, I suppose, perception, your view of kind of where you live and all that has changed, and you're kind of seeing, okay, we could do more greenery around here, we could do with more trees, we could do with more like mean gardens.
Yeah, our place where we live is like pretty bad for vandalism, everything like that, bad behavior, like more rubbish on the streets than anywhere I've ever seen, like where I live. So, yeah. So it should help people like get planted and everything.
And like, I mean, James, I mean, what Luke just said there, you know, have you as well, since you've done this, does you reckon, like, I mean, did you, the visibility of litter and the visibility of all this has improved and you want to do something about this now?
Yeah. Like, I've noticed that there's more litter on the ground than there is more plants in my estate being planted.
Yeah. And so the whole thing with that is, you see, if you have a waste ground is a dumping site. If you have a community garden, you're less likely to throw your bag of rubbish there or your washing machine. Yeah. So really, that's what it's about. The more we can green up the areas, the more you provide spaces. I mean, you know, if there's a derelict site, you can go and you can drink and you can do drugs in that space. If there's a community garden, you're much more reticent to go and do antisocial behaviour in that space.
Yeah.
But it's also for the younger kids growing up who get used to seeing flowers and trees and plants and lawn. And engage with nature and have nature as opposed to being in the concrete jungle, you know? Yeah. So for some areas, like the blooming transition translates out across all schools. So that's schools from affluent areas and schools from disadvantaged areas. I think the benefit in terms of disadvantaged areas is that it's providing those kids who don't have a park and just have a lot of grass, you know, that it's providing them with getting in and helping plant the trees and change their environment. Yeah.
But also a question around that then for James, you know, it's like the fact, you know, that you're kind of noticing this lack of green. Are you also kind of asking questions? Why isn't there more plants there? Why isn't there more kind of green spaces? Because when Fionn talks about Bloom Fringe, I mean, that's an amazing initiative and they're coming in later on to talk, but that's kind of the city centre. Out where ye are, it's like, I mean, are you asking questions about, well, why haven't we got more green spaces? Is this kind of making you more aware of that as well?
Yeah, it is. Like, I've noticed that at the top of my road there is a field, but nothing's in that field other than people went on a Saturday night after it. There's only bottles there or needles there, and like there's little kids around. Why can't we just get the whole estate involved with making a garden there?
Do you think as well that if either of you try to lead something like that, that would people take you seriously?
No.
Is this the thing? It's like, because it's through the school, what you've done is really, really important. So, but like when you go outside, people still see you like as two teenagers, you know?
Yeah.
How do you change that though, Fionn?
But that's what will change over time, because once, you know, okay, there's one school in Clondalkin now that will have its own garden. There's five other schools in that catchment area that may come on board and do something. So already that notion of being able to make a change. And I mean, the reason why it's Bloom and Transition, it's not because it's just transition year students. It's about the change, making Bloom transition itself into something else and putting this notion of community gardens. I mean, GOI is brilliant, GOI is great, but GOI is really taken up by the middle classes and the affluent. They can already afford to buy their own organic food. It's how do we spill that down into other schools and other areas? And the only way we do that is by putting it on the map. So for everybody who comes to Bloom, for the garden centres who are coming into Bloom, who want to sponsor the gold medal gardens inside and get all the kudos, I'm hoping we're in 2 to 3 years, they're going to want to be jumping on our bandwagon. Do you know? We're only coming over the hill now, but we're making a loud noise.
Yeah, but what you said there is something very interesting, because normally, Fionn, when people talk about like what the lads are here talking about, like changing the areas, they're immediately thinking about politicians and they're immediately thinking of that side. You've took a totally much more radical and a much more interesting route to that.
Yeah, grassroots. That's the way it has to be. That's how the GAA got off the ground, you know? So it's literally, we can copy that type of module and we can get in and actively garden. I've done a project in Bluebell, and the idea was to get the kids there to grow their own place name. So we grew 3,000 bluebells and we planted the bluebells all through. So what happened there was the young school kids harvested the seeds, and then they brought the seeds to the elderly people in the community who grew them on their windows and their balconies. They gave them back into the secondary school, and the secondary school came out and facilitated the planting days. So there's three generations active in a community to give voice to that area. Now that was sponsored by the Lewis line, because the Lewis was just going through the top. So a little bit more than that, it's just thinking outside the box. It's what you can do in your community. If there is a waste ground there, Dublin City Council will help you clean it up or set up a group. If you organise a local gardening committee, there's funding from the growers' funds. If you're connecting with a DIY club, they'll send down a lecturer or somebody. If you contact Dublin City Council, they may send somebody like me to go in and help create a project. So there is options and there is scope for how you can actually not just pretty your area, but actually have an impact and a change on people who live in that particular region. You know, and how they then engage with what goes on. And that has a knock-on spill-out effect.
Okay, excellent. Well, thank you very much for your time. Thanks very much for coming along, Fionn. Thank you, huge thanks to Luke and James as well for coming along and giving us a view from their grassroots. Please give a big round of applause for these lads.
Many thanks to Fionn, Luke and James for joining us at Banter, and thanks to Rosa Borbia and her team for all their help with Banter at Bloom last year. This podcast was produced by Banter series producer Tanya White. Check out thisisbanter.com for news we're up to at Banter, plus you can also listen back to all the Banter podcasts to date. Bloom 2016 takes place at Dublin's Phoenix Park from June 2nd to 6th, and keep an eye on bloominthepark.com for more information. We'll be back next week with another podcast. Until then, goodbye and take care.